trash.
Well, I'll tell you what I want. What I really, really want. It's medication.
Yeah, no, we've discussed this before. They'll put you back in that room again.
But those words, can they really be from one of the greatest songs ever written?
No.
Well, it's all right. So it's all right. It's one of the all righty songs ever written. But it's 24 years ago. Well, about 23 now, if we're honest.
Roughly.
And so we thought that would be an excellent idea to celebrate for no apparent reason the 24th fabulous anniversary of 1996.
It's a good year? Question mark?
And welcome to Don't Let's Chat. I'm Ben Baker.
I'm Phil Cashel. Hello.
And welcome to 1996 for as far as the eye can see. For podcasts, that's not very useful.
Yeah.
We asked you out there in internet land at Don't Let's Chat on Twitter, at Patreon, for your best 1996 things. And you gave us some stuff.
Yep.
Before we go into number 20, should we just talk about a few things that didn't make the list?
I think we should, yeah. Kids in the Hall, Brain Candy.
I mean, that was just me.
The film.
That was literally just me voting for that. But
yeah,
it was. It's one of my favourite films, I don't care. Command and Conquer, Red Alert.
It's alternate history, Europe, and it all goes a bit camp as it goes along, to be fair.
First Band on the Moon by the Cardigans.
Buying limited edition gold 7 inches at X Records in Bolton.
One of the records you could have bought from X Records in Bolton was Undisputed Attitude by Slayer. Oh, the idea of making you sit down and listen to a Slayer record.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah, it's no.
Well, Super Kalo, Charlie Brooker's website from back in the days where he was still a writer on PC Zone.
Yeah. The Mr. T Experience, punk band, Paul Twist, asked for them.
Right, Oh Dr. Beeching,
yeah.
The train-based sitcom. That...
I mean, there's no other way of describing it, really. It's a train-based sitcom.
How... Who... If I remember rightly, it's the same team and cast as Heidi High and You Rang My Lord, isn't it?
It is, yes, yes, it yeah. is. Yeah. But the train is a new cast member. Heidi High in those little circles, it said Paul Shane, Jeffrey Holland, Train.
Ian Train.
Ian Train pops his head. But none of them made it in. So there must be some bloody good stuff that did. So we'll start with number 20.
Bear Van Beers. I did not know who this was.
No, I genuinely didn't.
She was
one of those people who were literally around for a very short time.
Yeah.
Basically, a very attractive lady who appeared on a bunch of stuff. Mainly Top of the Pops. Apparently, she used to write in every week saying, "Put me on Top of the Pops, mate." That's what she sounded like, probably.
I mean, she's Dutch, so no. She didn't sound like that.
Schultz, put me on top of your pops, please. I would like to come on and watch the live performance by the Woolbeckers. But yeah, she eventually got on there, and then she started cropping up on other stuff.
So I did some Googling earlier on, and I found an episode of Games Master that she appeared on playing Sonic 3D Blast while Dave the Animal Perry looks on in disdain.
Did he have any other looks?
No, he didn't.
Yeah. Now, the name Bear Van Beer, totally weird, very strange. Why?
Hippie parents, Holland.
A lot of people have parents like yours. Usually they have to visit them in high-level maximum security asylums.
Number
19. The Brass Eye Cancellation.
Brass Eye, yes. I've seen it, but I didn't see it until 1997.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about the cancellation? Because
I don't think I was...
Had to be online, really. Because I asked Tim Worthington about it, and he said that the Channel 4 message boards were where a lot of the community came from, actually, like comedy lists.
Morris's new show, Brass Eye, and promising controversy when suddenly the series was pulled from the schedule. Now, the official PR line was that more time was needed to make sure the adventurous satirical format didn't break the TV regulator's rules. On Wednesday, the series finally went ahead. Had Mr. Morris been emasculated in the process? Here's a sample of your views.
There are a lot of people out there that will take what Chris Morris said at face value, which is dangerous because there is nothing funny about animal abuse at all.
They stopped a pig throwing itself out of a tree onto a python in a two-way death pact. In Chester.
It was supposed to be on, I believe, like 10:30 on Tuesday nights or something like that, and it ended up being on 9:30.
Yeah.
And it actually went out. So I think that was even more dangerous, you know, the higher target, I suppose.
Yeah.
So if you were online during then, you tell us about it at Don't Let's Chat on Twitter.
Yes.
And also tell us about number 18.
Number 18, Resident Evil. Video games in 1996. I'm not going to go through everything that came out in 1996.
I appreciate that.
But you had stuff like Super Mario 64, which was a big deal. Duke Nukem 3D. The first Tomb Raider was 1996. 1996 was a really big video game year in a lot of ways. Resident Evil, kind of a revelation in terms of it was cinematic in a different way to other stuff, in that you had full motion video sequences at the start in a very B-movie style with some terrible acting. Because it was more focused on don't get killed rather than kill everything else, the idea of having like not enough bullets to do everything was an unusual one.
So that's the, what you'd say, survival horror. Is that pretty much the first one?
You could argue that Alone in the Dark, which I think was a couple of years before, was like the first one. But Resident Evil was the first one that, you know, more than half a dozen people played, I think is fair to say. The first big one.
Yeah. 17.
17, Slight Return.
Could have been number one. Very close to being number one, kept off by Spatch Emin, Babylon Zoo, which is, of course, that song that no one knew. No one knew how it went, except the fact it was number one for 5 weeks. And it was on Radio 1 all the time, and Top of the Pops was still a thing that people watched. Yeah.
Where did you go?
Where's he gone now?
Where did you go?
Have you seen him anyway?
Forget it again.
I've been blown if I know where he is. I said he was here a bit ago.
Where did they go, Ben?
Well, we don't know.
No.
There's never been a response record. And we continue the musical theme with number 16.
Take That, Split Up.
I remember being happy about this, but
yeah.
as previously established, was quite an indie alternative lad. You know, I was 15, 16, you know.
Well, that's
even
it.
Though I think even then I sneakily knew they had some of the best pop songs ever recorded.
At the time, personally, I would have been, ah, ha, 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 that band has gone. Because, of course, when you're like, you know, I would have been 16, 17 at this point, and almost everyone's an arsehole at that age, let's be fair.
We're all a bit nervous. Thanks for everybody's support in the last 5 years. You've been absolutely fantastic to us. But unfortunately, the rumours are true.
Hey!
How Deep Is Your Love is going to be our last single together.
Oh, I told
you! It's going to be our last album.
The last album, I said that.
And from today... There's no more.
And then they all went solo. Do you remember what every member's first solo single was?
So yeah, Robbie's was Freedom 90. I can't remember what Gary's was. Was Mark Owen's Clementine?
I think that was second after Child, Innocent Child.
Oh, no, yeah, fair enough.
And then it was Clementine.
And...
Yeah,
no one remembers anything that Jason or Howard did.
They didn't do nothing. I don't know if they did anything. I think Gary's was Forever Love.
Robbie Williams leaves and ruins it.
It's true. 15.
15. 12 Monkeys. Ah, Terry Gilliam.
I'm going to be honest and say I've seen this once and it was in the 90s.
Yep.
And I've always meant to rectify that and I don't know why I haven't.
It's an interesting causal loop story, but the problem is that there's quite a few of those and
yeah.
And it's well done and it's, you know, it's fine.
So again, I said there were a few films I thought I might get in there. There was like The Cable Guy, where that's kind of like, even though it was quite unpopular at the time, I thought that'd get in because that's sort of developed quite a cult following.
Yeah.
I've always been extremely fond of it. Mars Attacks, like that didn't get in either, which is an odd one. Again, not a massive film, but quite popular.
No.
And Independence Day.
Yes.
Which was the biggest film of 1996.
It was. I mean, it's not great.
I've been saying for quite a few years how it's not a great film, and people are always like, take that back. And the sequel came out, and I think a lot of people revisited it and went, oh, it's not.
I mean, it was in cinemas, it was a spectacle. I will certainly give it that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a massive film that warranted seeing on a big screen, but it's not had the longevity because it's not. There's not a lot there.
Welcome to Earth 14.
14. The Demon Headmaster.
Again, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we're struggling a bit here because me and him were
too old for this.
A little bit older when this came out, so I didn't really watch CBBC at the time. I was mainly, let's be honest, interfering with myself, eating biscuits and watching MTV. Soz.
I'd read the book, because the book came out a couple of years before, I think. I miss when the BBC did stuff like this. These sort of sci-fi dramas for kids. Because I'm obviously going to go straight to Dark Season, because I was the right age for that one, and there was no Doctor Who on, and it was Russell T Davies writing Doctor Who, basically. You used to get something like that once a year, I would say, at least. We're into Old Man Yells at Cloud territory. I just miss when TV channels would do stuff like that for kids.
I mean, CBBC does a good job. It really does. For the money they have, which is nothing.
Yeah.
They do an excellent job. But what I was watching, not The Demon Headmaster, instead was number 13.
Number 13, which you were repeatedly phoning into the box for, I suspect. The video for Wannabe.
I didn't need to because somebody else always was.
That is true.
And specifically, the song is a good song, and it deserved to be a hit, and it launched Spice Girls massively, but it was the video.
Oh, yeah.
And I know it's a bit not okay now sort of things, but let's be honest, they went, here are five attractive girls, there's one for lots of different types, and they're all wearing very, very skimpy outfits. And when you think of things from 96, my first thought is that video.
Fair enough.
It's so fun, they're in control, they're having a laugh, and you think, yeah, they seem fun, let's see where this goes. And obviously it went straight to the top.
Yep.
Of my
undies. No.
Sorry.
You don't. 12. You know you don't have to, right? You can think it and not say it. You know that's an option. That,
but that's why I do it. Badness.
Can I ask something?
Go on.
What does curmudgeonly head mean?
Means his
that's
head.
You, Lee.
That's another catchphrase.
Curmudgeonly head.
Curmudgeonly head.
That's in the magazine, isn't it?
It is. It is in the Comedy that? Review. Well,
you two are regular contributors to this magazine, are you not?
No, we've just been interviewed for it this month.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Would you like to contribute to a magazine like that? Do you think it's important to have a magazine for comedy people and for people that like comedy?
Well, actually, I'm glad that I'm in because I was supposed to talk to you yesterday on the phone about contributing. Yeah. I can just do we'll it. We'll talk after the show.
Number 12, Comedy Review magazine. I have not heard of this, Ben. What is it?
It's a magazine about reviewing comedy.
Right.
I think there were five issues altogether, and I have four of them.
Okay.
So before this, there was Deadpan, which was kind of a little bit comedy, about comedy, a little bit like full of comedy stuff, and it had all the latest, but it had its very own sort of fanzine-y style look, and Comedy Review is very slick. It looks like Select, and it's all about pushing, obviously, the latest comedy. In 96, so I started to flick through. So the people they are tipping for the top in issue one, Bill Bailey.
Okay, well, that good shout.
And he's touring with Donna McPhail. Tim Vine.
Never heard of him.
Is hosting...
Housemates.
Yeah! He is indeed in because he's hosting TV Housemates. And there's a classic interview, because he won a new one, with Bill Hicks.
I mean, you know.
An interview with Stephen Fry. A look at the Fast Show before Series 2 had come out and it had probably become a massive thing.
Yeah.
American versions of British TV shows when you just couldn't find out about stuff like, you know, Three's Company and not necessarily the news.
Yeah.
You can win a Sony 28-inch widescreen television.
Good.
Which recommend retail prices at £999.99.
So, I mean, that is a solid snapshot of 1996, I think, in comedy.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Number 11.
Ash.
Yeah.
I've heard of them.
They were.
They're one of those bands I've heard so much about.
They were. Probably one of the bands I've seen the most. I've seen them many times anyway. I think there was their youth. It was so ridiculously young. I mean, their album was called 1977 because that's when they were, two of them were born. And right. Also Star Wars. But it was just like, Ash were one of the biggest things in pop at the time. But do you know who else was big back in 1996?
Who, Ben?
It was, of course, the Smurfs.
Now,
for some reason, some bloke went, shall we do some songs with sped up vocals and sent up by the Smurfs? And they were huge. They had like a number two album and everything. It was nuts. They had like three or four big albums in like an 18-month period, and then everyone went sick of it.
Did any of the Smurfs albums come with a frisbee? Because I'm reliably informed that 1977 did.
Well, it depends how you use them. So, I figured this was time for a fun quiz called Epo the Smurf. I went through the track listings because all of them are basically smurfing over there and smurfing back again. So, are these real or fake Smurf songs?
Right, go on.
Number one, Mr. Smurftastic.
No.
It's real.
Oh, fuck.
Two, Jesus to a Smurf.
No.
Sadly not. Sadly not, no. Number three, Ooh Ah Smurf a Little Bit.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real. Number four, Smurf Fuel Insanity.
No.
Oh, I wish it were, but you're correct. It is. Five, How Deep Is Your Smurf?
Please tell me that one's real.
Oh, it's just that put your rubber glove on and find out. No, it's fake. I'm sorry.
Damn.
Oh, six. Smurfing Alive.
Yeah, that's going to be real, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's crap.
Yep.
Number seven. Smurf Gets In Your Eyes.
No.
Of course, a play on John Alford's very well-remembered song, Smoke Gets In Your Eyes. Yeah, that's big. Eight, Smurf Hillbilly Joe.
No.
Yeah. That is their Cotton Eye Joe parody. Well, that's a parody. It's not a parody. It's just a song with the word Smurf in it. Number nine. Smurf Billy Rock, Smurf Billy Roll.
No.
Yes.
What?
It is.
It's real.
It is. That is real.
Jesus Christ.
And number 10. Smurfing on Heaven's Door. Cast a double A-side with Smurf those guns away.
So no, that's not a real one.
Smurf plane. You know what? Some things are always too soon. Oh, sorry. Oh, let's move on to number 10 quickly.
We should definitely do that. Born Slippy.
I think you'll find it's Bon Smurfy.
No, it's not. And it never will be.
Which is, of course, quite useful because that fits in with number 9.
Trainspotting. I've heard of that. It's a film.
Yeah, I mean, I adore Underworld. I'm a huge, huge Underworld fan. Bon Slippy. Mm-hmm. Still sounds brilliant, but I can't really justify it. Because, as you know, because of Trainspotting, everyone was on the heroin back then. We were all on the heroin. We all said, oh, can we have some delicious heroin, please, mother.
I mean, some of us weren't.
Right, well, here, I found the box office the week Trainspotting came out, mm-hmm. which was the week beginning 23rd of February.
Right.
Number two was Trainspotting. Obviously, all of the heroin.
Yep.
Let's just go through. Number nine, Loch Ness. Oh, Ted Danson on heroin looking for Nessie. We all remember it. Babe, obviously. Don't need to go any further with that one.
No, that's right. And the sequel, disgusting. The sequel, of course, was called Babe, Pig on Some Crack. So,
number seven was Father of the Bride Part 2, Father of the Heroine. We all remember it. So, number six was Seven, which I may have had some drugs in it. I can't remember. Let's say it had seven drugs in it.
Seven deadly drugs.
Five was Heat. Always heat your drugs up first. You can't take heroin cold.
Good.
Number four, Jumanji. I mean, that's how he took some heroin. He ended up in the board game.
Yep. That's,
and then he came out of the board game and he said, "Oh, kids, thanks. I've been stuck in that board game for 25 years. Also, have you got some heroin?"
Good.
Number three, Casino. Yeah, I think that probably
there's no heroin in that. It's coke.
I'm not allowed to watch 18s. Number two, sorry, spoiler. Number one, of course, Sense and Sensibility.
Yep.
Jane Austen, more like glue sniffing.
All of Jane Austen's books are about heroin. That's true.
Yeah, especially Persuasion. Have some heroin. Go on. Go on, have some heroin. All right, then.
Pride right. And yeah. Heroin.
And I mean, I've got the American one as well. I'm not going through all of them, but Muppet Treasure Island. Have you heard of such things?
Good.
And Rumble in the Bronx is, of course, code for heroin in the mouth. Thanks to Simon Tyers for finding those, by the way. Yeah, Trainspotting was at number nine. I don't think we need to tell you that it's a good film. It still stands up, I think.
Yep.
It makes me feel very old watching it, but it's already kind of out of time anyway because it's set a few years earlier and is very 70s influence. So
yeah.
But it's good. As is Trainspotting too. I really enjoyed that.
Fair enough.
You should watch it.
I might.
With some heroin.
I might not.
Is there any heroin in number eight?
No. Number eight is Doctor Who, the TV movie.
There were loads. He can't.
Anyway, there's a hospital, so there's opiates. There you go. So yeah, Paul McGann's, until relatively recently, single TV outing as the Doctor.
Yeah, so I tried to watch this at the time. I wasn't really a big fan of Doctor Who at the time because I'd kind of missed it.
Yep.
In a lot of ways, with my age and stuff. And I tried to watch it and I was baffled by it.
Yeah.
And looking back, I can see why. They should have just gone, scene one, hello, I'm Doctor Who, Paul McGann, moving on.
But that's
instead, there's about 25 minutes of Sylvester McCoy, which dying. I love how they paid him and the medding part of it and everything. But he's just there, and then obviously he gets shot. And he regenerates, and yes. Then he has to become. And it's such a. Like, they got it right with the RTD one with Rose. It's just like, hello, I'm a doctor. Moving on.
Yeah, I mean, it falls between two stools, doesn't it? Because it's obviously trying to appeal to the original fans by going, look, here's half an hour of Sylvester McCoy. And then just completely does its own thing entirely, which those people that were going, oh, look, it's Sylvester McCoy, which was me at the time, going, what's this? What have you done with this thing that I liked? Why have you done this with it? Because this isn't what it is. What's Eric Roberts doing here, and why is he doing that? I don't...
Why does it look like it's supposed to be an ITV at 5:30 on a Saturday tea time?
Exactly. You know, I've got more affection for it now than I did, because...
Well, now it's back. It's not a threat anymore. It's not an issue.
No.
But when it was the only Doctor Who for 15 years, nearly, 16 years.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was okay at the time. I was thinking, oh, that means there'll be some more Doctor... Oh, there's no more Doctor Who now. There's no...
Yeah. It's been ruined and ended and ruined. Number seven.
Number seven, Quake. So a few for this one. It's an odd one, is Quake, because I don't enjoy it much as a game. It's not as fun as Doom was, as far as I'm concerned. But what Quake was the first, like, proper mainstream big first-person shooter 3D engine that then got used in everything else forever. People will disagree with me on that. I know people that love Quake and think that it's more fun than Doom was, but for me it was more of a technical innovation at the time. Like, look, I can look up and down properly now. It's actually 3D. It's not pretending to be 3D.
Yeah, I had crappy machines, so I couldn't play the best stuff.
And when Quake first came out, I remember spending ages on AOL downloading the shareware first episode demo, and then it ran like absolute arse on my dad's laptop, which was the only thing I had access to play games on at the time, because it needed a 3D accelerator card that I didn't bloody have. So it was it looked rubbish and ran slow at the time. But, you know, there we go.
Yeah. If you tell kids that today, they're not bothered.
No, they'll go, Fortnite. Why didn't you just play stuff Fortnite. On a console where everything worked, you idiot?
Yeah, stupid. Number six!
Number six, The Adam and Joe Show.
Series one, I think there's only four episodes of series one. And it was post-midnight. It was post-TFI Friday repeat. Yeah. And it definitely felt like that sort of show that no one else can be watching this. Even if it wasn't that late and it was on a Friday night, it was like, this was this homemade thing. These guys were making their own puppet movies and, you know, doing daft stuff and interviewing strange celebrities. And
whole post-pub TV thing that is obviously not a thing anymore. But stuff that was just like, oh, we've got this time to fill. What can we commission for this? Adam and Joe was one of the how on earth did this happen things.
Yeah, because I knew them from Takeover TV. I was a big fan because I didn't go out at that time. I was too young really to go out much.
Yeah.
It was a bit more of a magazine show, Series 1. And they'd like review like the orbits and stuff like that, you know.
Had they got Vinyl Justice yet, or was that?
Yeah. Vinyl Justice was in there. Things Bad Dad's in there.
Yeah.
And stuff. But yeah, it's more loose as a format.
Yeah.
Five.
Euro 96. If you like the football.
Well, you see, I'm not that bothered about football, but I remember Euro 96 being very exciting. Partly because it was in England. Partly because the team were quite good. There was excitement, and then Three Lions came out, and yeah, whatever you think about Three Lions now, you've heard it a million times, bellowed by a million arseholes, but it felt special because, again, fantasy football was this late-night comedy show. It wasn't for everybody, and suddenly it was out there.
Mm.
And then it was successful as well, because obviously all the way through the tournament, the Fugees were number one.
Oh, God, they were, weren't they?
And then when we won a very important game, it went back to number one. Much like when we were doing well in the last tournament, people took Three Lions back to number one.
Yeah.
There was an album, a Euro 96 album. It says stuff like Primal Scream and stuff on it, but
was Collapsed Lung on there?
Collapsed Lung was on there. Black Grape, do you remember theirs?
England's Irie?
It was England's Irie.
There we go.
So bizarrely starts with 45 seconds of a National Lampoon Radio Hours sketch about American football. Do you remember what the official song of Euro 96 was?
I don't know.
No one does, because it was rotten. It was We're In This Together by Simply Red, an album track from their already out album, and it was like, that's why Euro 96 was, had like Three Lions as the underdog. And that's, I think, like why it was very popular as well. So, yeah, Euro 96, very exciting time. Impossible to get across now how exciting it was, because it's just some old sport now. But it was good, I promise. It was. number four.
Number four, Kaneki. They're good.
I first heard on Shine 6. Which was the sixth of the Shines compilations.
Thank you for explaining that,
Which were the indie alternative compilations that had only started the year before, but they brought loads out because obviously that was what was in. And I heard Punker on there, and it was just like, this is something from a different planet. I adore this. I very quickly went out and bought all of the singles that I could find at the time. And right at the end of the year, they released In Your Car. On my birthday, because my friend went, I ain't got you a birthday present. I went, you could buy us both CDs of In Your Car. So they did. I think people have gone from in 96 because they were on the cusp. And it's always more exciting when someone's on the whale. It's a wheel of misfortune with Kaneki.
Yes, we come to undoubtedly the highlight of the programme, Wheel of Misfortune with Kaneki. Now, tonight, it's Marie. Marie?
Yes?
So what are you up to tonight, then? Where are you? What are you doing?
I am in Essex. I can be no more specific than Essex. I don't know where I am, if I'm honest. It's by a drag racing track where we're filming our video.
All right.
And I'm in all fancy makeup, and I've got hair like snakes. Because they've done it all fancy. I've been on two motorbikes for 4 hours today as well.
Oh, very nice.
Dead exciting.
Very nice indeed. Yeah,
so much fun.
Yep.
And then the second album is the It's All Gone Wrong and We're Miserable album. But it's brilliant. I can't recommend getting enough. Like, the first album's basically the I'll put this on before I go out album. Get me in the mood. And the second album is the I've come home at 3 a.m. in somebody else's shoes and some spew.
Good.
album. So, yep, Kinnicky, in at number 4.
Yep.
Number 3.
God. The Jarvis and Jacko incident.
This probably doesn't need explained to our listeners, but on the off chance, there are people from other countries that aren't England. It does happen, and we have a thing called the Brit Awards. It is a boring record industry backslapping, wanky event for giving out awards to people who are popular. And obviously that was the year after Britpop had broken big. So
yep.
Obviously like Blur and Oasis and stuff were all up for everything. But the big star was Michael Jackson, whose Earth Song had been Christmas number one and already was on everyone's tits by the time it came round in February, the awards. And he did this, what can only describe as messianic.
Yep, that is the correct word.
Thing, where he was kind of like, he had a load of kids around him. No. Kind of like praising him. Yeah. And he was lifted up into the sky in white robes with heavenly light on him. And it was like, Jarvis Cocker were like, this is shit. So he ran on the stage, bent over, sort of made like a talking out of your ass motion, you know, like you sort of flap your hands.
Yep.
You know, as if he was farting in his direction. But because this is before camera phones, it was barely seen, and all Jackson's people went mental.
The lead singer of the pop group Pulp, Jarvis Cocker, has strenuously denied allegations that he attacked three children performing with Michael Jackson at last night's Brit Award ceremony.
Three of the children on stage with him were allegedly punched and knocked over. The organisers called the invasion dangerous and irresponsible. Fellow musician Brian Eno denied Jarvis Cocker had assaulted the children. He said he'd been protesting at the Hollywood-style showbiz of Michael Jackson's performance.
I think he did it because the show was so awful.
The Brit Awards themselves are on television tonight. There'll be plenty of stars, but viewers won't be seeing last night's bit of pulp friction. Nick Higham, BBC News.
And I remember the papers not getting it at all, because they're like, how dare it go after our beloved Michael, and then everyone like, no, we love Mike Jarvis.
Just gave him loads of awards. He's funny.
Yeah.
We like him.
And do you remember who tried to get him off?
Was it Bob Mortimer?
Yeah, it was Bob Mortimer. He was a solicitor, and he went and said, like, what seems to be the problem, lads? And then all of Michael Jackson's lawyers, who I just assume are that blue-haired one from The Simpsons, like, multiplied. Just like steamed in, he went, I'm out, lads. I mean,
if you're going to make that comparison, Bob Mortimer would absolutely be Lionel Hutz in that scenario.
Yeah. So basically, Jarvis got arrested, and then I think a few photographers came forward and went, no, that's not what happened. But that kind of came to define 96, certainly pre-Spice Girls, where music was. Number 2!
It's inevitable. Fist of Fun, Series 2.
You know, people love Lee and Herring. Back to the comedy review. Can the second series of BBC's Fist of Fun be expected to equal the heights of mediocrity so casually reached by the first?
Yes, is the answer. It was good.
Do you know which sketch they had to take out of Series 2? Which had been on the radio?
No.
It was the Christian Church crawl.
Oh, honey. God, they did, didn't they? Yeah.
Where you had to eat the communion wafers.
Who was it? It was a BBC executive that said that it would just... No.
Someone in a high authority position made us take it out, called it unbroadcast.
That was it.
I mean, God, talk about no staying power. All he does is sit there, like, look blobbish, and thump those sort of things.
You're better without him, Mark.
I'm better without him. Yeah. I've often said this.
I think he's holding you back.
I think he really is. Yeah. All right, lad, I was just talking about you.
I'm just on the chat.
He's
line.
A good bloke, isn't he? I think the atmosphere really picks up when he comes back.
It does, doesn't it?
You're taking the piss.
I think you're holding him back, Mark. And there's a tense silence now. We've caused embarrassment.
You know, you need each other, guys.
Bollocks.
So, a 10 p.m. comedy thing by two awkward men is at number 2. What could be the number 1 best thing from 1996 as voted for by you, the listeners?
It's Mark and Lard on the Graveyard Shift. Hooray.
Mark Radcliffe.
I really hate that Mark Radcliffe show. They don't play any decent music.
Hapless Boy Lard.
Wonky Alice, Porcupine Tree, Bevis Frond, Frank Sidebottom, Horslips, all those crap old bands.
Whipple Winch, Sham 69.
Well, I like listening to Scrawn and Lard. I like the fact that they're old and fat and useless.
Yeah, all right.
I like the fact that they obviously haven't got a clue what they're talking about.
Shut it!
Farty noises.
Farty noises.
Farty noises.
Farty noises with Assishue.
Bless you.
Scrawn.
And.
Lard.
When.
Are.
They.
On.
Again.
Cod. Fish.
Battered.
Balls. Farty noises with Assishue.
Bless you.
New underpants.
Y fronts.
Old music.
Pardon.
Bless you.
Graveyard shift.
It's on now, I think.
Because it was such an important thing for our generation. Certainly for me, it was. It was on every night, 10 o'clock, except Fridays, weekdays. Gags running sketches, stuff like the Wheel of Misfortune with bands on. They'd have people reading a story over, like, the 4 days. There's poets. Kermode did his film stuff. Like, Stuart McConey would be on there, and Andrew Collins, and Kathleen Moran, and Harry Hill, and stuff. It's just, like, people who were around in Manchester would basically pop in and get involved.
Yes, there was the Wheel of Misfortune, but there was also the Circle of Chance, which used exactly the same jingle, but with Lard shouting Circle of Chance over the top of where it said it. When I first sort of started listening to the radio at night, I did stick Radio 1 on a lot, but when I first started listening to Radio 1, it was still Nicky Campbell in this slot. And at some point, it turned over to this, and I don't know why I had originally been listening to Nicky Campbell or why I continued listening to this. One of those they're not the same show.
I assume it's not, because they both had comedians on a lot.
Yeah, probably.
Weird how you can do comedy but also be passionate, and I think that was a real influence on me. It was like, I want to do stuff that, like, this program is like, for the best of it, it's like, this is us being passionate about stuff whilst being really silly as well. And I think Mark Ladd and Lee Herring both showed us that we could do stuff where you can have a sense of humour about naff things, but also secretly quite love them. But yeah, I hope there is something like that now. I don't know.
I think that teenagers are getting the same sort of thing, if not exactly the same thing, from the likes of YouTube and podcasts. I think that's where they're getting stuff from.
I hope so.
Rather than from national radio.
I hope so. I hope they're getting it from somewhere, because everyone deserves their own Mark and Lard. We just happen to have...
They do.
Well, Mark and Lard.
Them.
Yeah.
That's a good record, that, on Up Records of Accrington. Those are Tunic from Belfast and Comeback. And I believe, Lard, you've got some tour dates, have you?
I've got the tour dates handy.
Right,
yeah.
OK, where's the music for the tour dates? Right, here we go.
Tonight, in Belfast.
There's the tour dates for Tunic.
And that's it. That concludes our little jaunt through 1996. Thank you to everyone who voted. As I said, there was loads of stuff which didn't make the cut. And we could talk more at length about pretty much any of these subjects. But yeah, 1996 was a good year for me and an excellent year for Kleenex. I was wanking a lot is what.
So what's the title of this episode, Ben? Is this just going to be 1996 brackets wanking? Is that...
I mean, it is now.
Well, oh, God.
No, Anchor would never allow it.
That's true.
Good Smurf!
Bye.
Smurf.
No.
Amy, Charlie.
Cobblers.
This is just like life.
Shut up.